Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Mpoga. This evening we talk about intolerant governments in Africa, especially in 2016. And with us tonight is Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. He joins us from Durban, South Africa. Welcome to the show, Suleiman.
Good evening. Thank you very much, Douglas.
You're welcome. And joining us from Dallas, Texas, is Hussein Kiflo. Kiflo is a scholar and a political commentator. And good evening, Kiflo.
Good afternoon or good evening, Douglas and Suleiman.
Welcome to Reporters Roundtable, gentlemen. As I said, our topic tonight, we'll be talking about intolerant governments or intolerant acts by governments in Africa, especially in the year 2016. This is a big topic, gentlemen. Where do we begin, Suleiman?
It is a mixed bag, but as far as the continent is concerned, we have continued to have problems, especially given that on the continent we have got about three-tier systems of government. We have got those which are the traditional dictatorial governments. We have got the hybrids, which are between dictatorships and some little of democracy. And then we have got the actual democracies, those who have crossed the line and are racing like any other developed countries. I think we continue to have problems with those dictatorial governments, those with the leaders who have stayed 15, 20 years and who believe that they own the states, those who have captured the countries, and with their small cliques, they continue to feel that they own everything on those in these countries. So they feel the citizens don't have a right. They feel might is right. They have that mentality of winner takes all. So they don't expect any input from the people. They don't expect any opposition from the people. So in such countries, we have continued to have very heavy repression from the governments. And they spread across the continent from south, west, east. Of course, east and central is most affected, and even you have got parts of West Africa. So it is a chronic disease on the continent. It has continued. You can name names wherever you go. In East Africa, you have got Uganda, you have got Burundi, you have got Southern Sudan, you have got in Southern Africa, you've got Zimbabwe. In West Africa, you have got your Gabon, you have got Gambia, you have got Cameroon. So all these areas, we have had incidents of repression. East Africa, we have got Ethiopia, of course, is a classic case. My brother will talk about it. So in all these areas, the democratic space or the freedom of expression space has been narrowing and narrowing to date. I think it has even become worse in this 2016.
Kiflo, you hear Suleiman there mention a mishmash of governance models across the continent. I think you'd agree with that.
Yes, I agree with Suleiman 100%. And really, it's really depressing when you think about Africa and when you try to review 2016. In Africa, to point fingers, to begin pointing fingers is very easy, but to stop is very difficult because almost the whole continent is, we have these intolerant governments. They are becoming more and more brazen, and the impunity is really very, very hard to believe. And if you take the case of Ethiopia, it has declared state of emergency. I mean, even prior to the declaration of state of emergency, Ethiopia had never been a democratic country. It has been under a very repressive dictatorship for the past 25 years. And it was just a pretense that there was a constitution. Now they have made it, they no longer pretend. And as you might have followed up Ethiopia's case recently, they have arrested another prominent opposition figure when he was going back to Ethiopia after attending a summit in Europe. He was giving testimony to the European Parliament, and his name is Dr. Marara Gudina, and he was one of the opposition figure who was really, in fact, I should say that, fanatically committed to a non-violence struggle. And now they arrested him. And prior to him, before they arrested him, they also arrested for a second time another young blogger called Basukadu. These are the prominent individuals. But otherwise, the regime itself admits that it has detained over 11,000 Ethiopians. And this regime is always playing with figures. They, whenever it suits them, when they inflate the figure to show that their economy is improving, this is a fast-growing economy. But when it comes to human rights violations, they decrease the number. But I'm pretty confident that the people they detained are more than 11,000, and there were also some killings. So intolerance in Africa sadly is a norm.
Mm-hmm. You talk of arrests in thousands. Perhaps it's not worth it to mention even the deaths, because take for the protests that took place, we're talking about hundreds of people who were killed by the government forces.
Yeah, it's true. You know, there were some opportunities to get information before the so-called set of emergency, because there was some degree of internet connection in Ethiopia. So people were, citizens, you know, were reporting these killings. And there were also some journalists who managed to report the killings. But now it's difficult to report the killings and to corroborate the reports. But still, in places like Gondar, northwestern part of Ethiopia, heavy fighting is going on now, because there is no room for peaceful struggle in Ethiopia. Now, insurgents, armed rebellions, movements like Gimbots 7 are waging war in northwestern part of Ethiopia, in some parts of Ethiopia as well. So the killings are very, very high. And what is so tragic, the whole world, especially the media, the international media, talks about South Sudan, and that's fine. But Ethiopia, the seat of African Union, the ones, the Western, these donor countries, load as fastest growing economy, they seem to have forgotten what's going on in Ethiopia. Killings are taking place. Brutal repression are taking place.
Yes. You're talking of brutal killings and repression. There are many incidents across the continent. Suleiman, in November, for instance, was it November or December? November, in a country like Uganda, where government forces raided a cultural leader, and people call it a massacre. At least over 100 people were killed. Some figures, nobody can agree on the figures, but including women and children. And this is a country, for instance, when they had an election early in the year in February, the opposition leader since then has been under sort of a quasi-semi-house arrest for the crime being that he contested for leadership.
The ironical part of it, before I even go so far, is that Uganda itself is having a case in the ICC currently. Whereas, actually, if you compare the Ongwen who is being charged in the ICC, he is not different from the current regime with the massacres which we are being carried on. For sure, in Uganda is one of the cases of the dinosaurs of leaders, the dinosaurs who have been on the continent, who feel that they own the countries. The level of impunity is so high. The regime in Kampala has been in power for over 30 years. They feel they own the country. They feel they can do anything which they want. This is not the first time there has been tribal killings. This one in Kasese 400, even before that in 2009, there were massacres in Kayunga. There have been intermittent massacres wherever there are elections. The level of impunity is so high. The opposition leadership has been surrounded. They are oppressed. There is no freedom of expression space within the country. Not only Uganda itself, even other dictatorial regimes which are similar to Uganda, as you are well aware, in Cameroon right now, the English-speaking part of the country, there has been repression there. There have been deaths there. The same dictatorial regimes which have been in power for more than 30 years. In DRC, recently, when there were demonstrations, over 50 people died. Again, the level of impunity. The one of Congo Republic. Mm. He was reelected in power. A lot of violence, a lot of death for the population. So all these regimes, 2016. Like the years before, they are continuously massacring people in broad daylight. And this has been the trend, and it is continuing to be the trend because they feel they cannot leave power.
Kifulu, the examples, as you say, are many across the continent, from east to west, south to north. It doesn't appear that the so-called international community, or there's an outcry in the international community about these intolerant governments on the continent?
Yeah, you see, as I always say, the so-called international community, the donor countries, the Western powers, they make this outcry whenever a dictator runs counter to their interest, They are tough on dictators like Isaias Afwerki of Eritrea, Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe. And, you know, we know for what reason that the Western world make these outcries against these dictators. It's not because they are worse dictators than the others, because they run counter to their interests. Mugabe expropriated land from the minority whites and gave it to his according to their allegation, gave it to his loyals, to his loyal cadres. But the Ethiopian regime, and that is what the Ethiopian regime has been doing for the past 25 years. In Ethiopia, land is not an individual. An Ethiopian citizen has no right to own land. But the cronies of the rulers, the officials themselves, they have amassed, you can't imagine how what amounts of wealth they have amassed. So these things they don't talk about. You know, they always criticize dictators like Robert Mugabe, Isaias Afwerki of Eritrea, but when it comes to Ethiopia, when it comes to Uganda, they are soft. In fact, at various times, they praise them for having fastest growing economy, for being an ally in this so-called war on terror. So there is this double standard. And that's why, you know, even though we know that Robert Mugabe is autocratic, so when the international community tells you that Mugabe is autocratic, and when you see them dilly-dallying with dictators from Ethiopia, from other African countries, you know, it makes it so pointless.
Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, let's remind our listeners, those who are just joining us right now, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, Tonight we are discussing intolerant governments in Africa, and our panelists are Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst, and we also have Hussein Kiflu, a social and political commentator who is joining us from Dallas, Texas, here in the U.S. Suleiman Kiflu there mentioned the issue of double standards and all that. There is a way that somehow most of these repressive regimes on the continent are the ones that are awash with foreign aid.
Because they have been able to play the ball according to the international community. As my brother has said, they are fitted into the interests of the international community. Many of them have jumped on the bandwagon of fighting terrorism. Though they may not be affected as such, but they have offered boots on the ground, which many of the international countries cannot do. They have been the foremen on the ground. We have got many of these dictators. They have got boots in Somalia. They have got boots in Darfur. They have got wherever there is any incident. They volunteer to give boots on the ground. They volunteer to participate. As they pay back, the international community has paid them back handsomely. It has paid them back with all the benefits. They are given the aid. They are given the moral support. They are not bothered if they massacre people. It's not an issue. As you have just said, imagine someone attacking a palace for a local leader in Uganda, and then kill over 100 people, women and children. Those who are remaining, you just get them, huddle them and strip them naked, mistreat them, arrest them, put them anywhere you want without trial. It's just a broad day massacre, but no noise has come from anywhere. But they'll tell you Bashir is the most repressive person on this world. So what is the difference between Bashir and this one who massacres during broad daylight? So there is a double standard because for them, they are able to play the game which they want them to play. They are foremen in the interest of the international community. That is why they can be tolerated. That is why they are shielded. That is why they can go away with the murder. And that is why they continue to massacre as many as they can at will to fit their own interests.
Gentlemen, I'll put this one to both of you. In 2016, there was raised concerns and calls for many African countries to desert the ICC, the International Criminal Court. Actually, some countries did take steps to apply to leave the Rome Statute, the court. Is this in relation to the standards of repressing their own people, or what do you think, Kiflu?
It's obvious. It is with the status of repressing their own people, because ICC, if you remember, when most African dictators were not that concerned when ICC went after Al-Bashir, I think it was Al-Bashir. Mm-hmm. But when it went after the Kenyan leaders like Uhuru Kenyatta and
his vice president Ruto. Ruto.
Then they really became concerned. So that's when they started ganging up with one another. They used this African Union to pull out from ICC. Until that time, the Ugandan strongman Museveni was was warming up to ICC because it was only going after the Lord Resistance guy, Kony. Mm-hmm. I think his name is Kony.
Yes.
And they were not complaining. They were not making any complaints at all. But when it started coming after one of their own, then they even started rallying around Al-Bashir. To the best of my memory, my recollection, they were not that much concerned, even for Al-Bashir. It is when it comes to Uhuru Kenyatta and his vice president.
Ruto.
So that shows you, shows you, one, the Kenyans, the Kenyattas, they have a strong lobby in the clubs of African dictators. And two, they are concerned that this ISIS it means business, and it's going to come after them. They know what they have done. They have been killing people. They have been violating human rights with impunity. So they know that sooner or later it's coming after them. But for your information, the Ethiopian dictator, the one who died, Mulla Zenawi, was smart enough, you know, unlike other dictators. I give him that credit. Even though he was a brutal dictator, he was smart, and he didn't sign up to the ICC. but now he's the one who inherited Haile Mariam. He's just playing games with his colleagues. Ethiopia didn't sign up to ICC.
Mm-hmm.
So it is. In answer to your question, it is with their own status, not out of concern for Africa.
I see, Suleiman. There are some voices here and there on the continent that were actually condemned this move to get out of the ICC.
Of course, there are some clear democracies. There are some clear leaders. Those in Botswana, Senegal, Ghana, Mauritius. There are some sincere leaders who are really in the business of governing people for the sake of improving the lives of people in their countries. But for those rogue regimes, of course, they have got lots of skeletons in their cupboards, and they know that time is running out for them. That is why you find that East Africa was leading the batch of those who wanted to pull out of the ICC. No doubt ICC was not taking them softly. Taylor is already there. Bagbo is already there. When now Bemba is already there, when Kenyatta and Ruto joined the band, then it shook all of them and they knew time is running out. That is why you find countries like Burundi, countries like Gambia, of course Uganda is an obvious case, DRC, all these ones who have been massacring people, who have made their countries look like graveyards. They know that they will have their time because they have killed the institutions within their own countries. They know that an international institution like that one will not leave them and they will be held responsible for the massacres which they have carried on. So that is why there was that move. And I think they still want to see a movement out of the ICC. Though they have seen that with the trial of Hissein Habre, whether they move out of the ICC, still justice will catch up with them. I don't think young people forgive them for the massacres. One cannot just continue massacring people day in, day out. And then you think that today when you leave power, you'll be exonerated because you are a great leader. You are great in your own camp, within your own clique, not the population of the country.
I see. Now, as we wind down, what next for the continent? Because the such a countries what we're discussing tonight are quite a number on the continent. So what needs to happen? How can things change? Can this can't go on for long because some of the leaders you're talking about have been in power for 20, 30 years, and things that don't seem to be getting any better. So what needs to happen, Kifuru?
Yeah, you're right. This can't go on forever. And the way I think Africa is ripe for change, sadly, in some of the change may not be, you know, it may get worse before it gets better. But in one way or another, most African nations are ripe for change. In the case of Ethiopia, still opposition groups need to come together. They are still fragmented, and they are fragmented partly because of the nature of this regime that was keeping its power along the line of ethnicity, and it has spread this divisive ethnic politics even to the opposition camp. So that has to change. And the opposition groups, especially the leaders, they have to realize this and come together and, you know, narrow their differences for the common good. And I think it's the same in other African countries. In most African countries, sometimes they squabble over petty issues while the bigger picture is to get rid of dictatorship and bring back their country into a solid, genuine democratic process. Once you bring most African nations into this solid, genuine democratic process. The rest, you know, the rest of the issues can be worked out.
I see. Suleiman, briefly, your last take on what can be done.
It is both the internal and external lobby, because these dictators have got external support also. We need to gang up, as my brother said. While internally the opposition need to organize them, externally we also need some of our leaders who have internationally recognized leaders like Thabo Mbeki, like Kofi Annan, some of these leaders who have been in leadership and they are recognized, they need to lobby international countries. They need to come together also and start lobbying to be against these regimes, because internally they have got the ability, but we need also to cut off their support from the external leadership. So we need also the leadership, the experienced and tested leadership on the continent to combine and start lobbying the international community to stop supporting these regimes.
I see. Well, gentlemen, we seem to be out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Hussein Kiflu, a social and political commentator, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst. And that's it for tonight. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can access it by going to the Voice of America main website, scroll down to programs, and you can listen to it again. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Mpoga in Washington.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.